Blog Talk Radio.
Check it down, 30, going deep. And he's got his receiver, Adams! Slicing in for the touchdown.
The Pulse of the Pack Podcast.
Delay and big running room.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
How about now, Jason? Can you hear me now?
There he is. All right. We are live.
I hate Blog Talk Radio. Okay, so I just had a really cool intro, so I'm going to try it again. All right, ready? 3, 2, 1. That never happened. TicketKing.com, and you are happy with your purchase if you just went through that, because my Green Bay Packers, your Green Bay Packers, and our Green Bay Packers, to quote the great Adam Schein, are now 3-0. The Green Bay Packers are 3-0 after beating the Denver Broncos 27-16 at Lambeau Field. It is their first 3-0 start since 2015. That year, they lost in the divisional round of the playoffs against Jason's favorite team, the Arizona Cardinals. So, not pretty, but a win is a win. And last year at this time, the Packers were 1-1-1, coming off of an ugly loss to the Washington Redskins on the road, where you could have very easily argued that the Packers could have been 3-0 or 0-3. Instead, they were kind of right there in the middle. But I am your host this evening. I am Jacob Westendorf, and I am exhausted, but 100% worth it. And joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, how's Arizona these days?
Arizona's great. And as I did earlier today with my other live show and the accolades I threw at my co-host, who also had a baby this week, I want everyone to know that the gentleman seated not next to me but across from me in a video format also welcomed his first child into the world this week. And I won't steal any more of that thunder, Jake, because I'm sure you probably have a few words that you'd like to say. So I will save my pleasantries on that for later in the show, but it's good. 3-0 feels good. It wasn't the prettiest thing in the world, but at this point, Jake, I'm starting to think that this is kind of the formula for this year's team. It could just be the tough opponents that the Packers have started out with, but I won't be surprised if by the time we're done with this season, you and I aren't talking about more games where we were just as equally satisfied as we were frustrated. But again, 3-0, tough to argue.
Yeah, hard to argue with the results, especially, like I said, this time a year ago, the Packers were 1-1-1, and we had no idea if they were any good. I think you had an inkling on how you felt about a lot of stuff, the defense, the offense that year. We knew the special teams were bad, but, you know, now 3-0, I think we've got a gauge of what some stuff is like, and they're almost a quarter of the way through a season. They will take on the Philadelphia Eagles on Thursday night at Lambeau Field. September 26th will be the date on that. And I'm excited. It's a game. I think the Eagles are really good. I think their roster is really good. I know that they're not off to the start that a really good team would indicate there. But at the same time, I mean, the Eagles are playing with, I mean, Mac Hollins and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside were two guys that – the Eagles' fourth down conversion today initially was Carson Wentz threw a back shoulder fade to Darren Sproles down the field. Like, that's the kind of straits that they're in terms of their weapons, because Jason, quite frankly, Darren Sproles is older than you are. So I think we know what that means in that regard. But so they'll take on the Eagles on Thursday. And before we get to that, we'll get to this. First off, congratulations to Jeremy Vander Linden, who you guys heard on our preseason prediction show. His daughter, Harlan Elizabeth, was born at 4:52 Lambeau time on Wednesday, September the 18th of 2019, which subsequently was 5 minutes before my daughter, Blake Elizabeth Westendorf, was born at 4:57 p.m. on September the 18th of 2019. So we have babies that are 5 minutes apart, which is kind of cool. Because we've done this show together for a long time. Jason, you and I have done this show together for a long time. Jeremy's been somebody that I've known of and just recently met. So it was kind of cool to see all of that stuff come to fruition, because we talked about it for so long. But the nice part of that was the Packers are now 1-0 in the era of Blake Elizabeth. And on that note as well, the Packers are actually undefeated since my wife told me she was pregnant. So that was in January, for those of you that are keeping score. So 3-0, if you really want to think about it that way. So that was cool. Let's dive right in, though. I'm sure that most people don't want to sit and listen through some of this stuff. So let's dive right into the game. The game starts, and the Packers, fun fact, have gotten the ball first on every single one of their games to start this year. They scored touchdowns in two of those games, and then they had a three and out against the Chicago Bears. Packers get the ball today. They go right down the field. They get a free play from Aaron Rodgers and Corey Linsley, as I believe it was Bradley Chubb jumped off sides, and Rodgers hit Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and it was an easy touchdown off that. And I kind of looked at my brother and said, this game's not going to be close, like not even a little bit. Ultimately, it wasn't, but it didn't quite turn out to be as easy as I thought it was going to be. The offense after their scripted plays, that's something that's becoming a bit of a trend here with this Packers team, except for the Bears game, obviously, because in the Bears game, really, I mean, nothing worked. Packers couldn't get anything going save for two possessions in that quarter. So in that second quarter of that game. So once they get off script, they start to struggle a little bit. And what the reasons for that could be, there are many of them. I'm not 100% sure yet what the cause and effect of that is, but I do know that the first two series of the last two games, the Packers have looked like the 2011 Green Bay Packers, and then after that, they look like the 2005 Green Bay Packers without Brett Favre throwing an interception on every other possession, where they can't get out of their own way. There's a lot of sloppiness. The Packers, they can't get to the line of scrimmage in time. They can't run the ball. They're throwing the ball away all the time. So that's kind of how this game started a little bit. But, Jason, what is your take here? Is this more like, are they ever going to be able to find at least some consistency? Or do you have confidence that they'll be able to find some consistency with how they look to start games and how they look once the games get going?
I don't think that they will. I know that might sound surprising, and it also may sound negative, but you're talking about a very established quarterback running this offense, and a lot of the things that have puzzled me and troubled me about it so far are not things that are unique to this season. So I don't think the Packers offense is ever going to really get too consistent. There's a new system in place. I don't see Aaron Rodgers at this point in his career changing his game. He just doesn't seem interested in doing that. I mean, maybe he will. He's embracing the short pass a little bit more. And, his first pass was to Mercedes Lewis. It was a dump off, and he opted for that pass instead of something he would have done in the past, waiting for something bigger downfield and potentially throwing an incompletion or just throwing the ball into the dirt, which I also saw way too many times today as well. But I'm not worried either as I say that, because I think the offense will be fine as long as the defense is also playing in the game. I'm running out of words to describe this Packers defense that's just more fun to watch than any other phase of the game. and it feels good to be excited when the opposing offense is on the field and the defense, they're having to face this defense, because it just doesn't seem to be a great proposition for opposing offenses. But offensively, I think now that we're three games in, it's a bigger sample size. I think some of the questions about the offense and the players on it might be valid. Geronimo Allison, very up and down. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, very up and down. Kumerow didn't play today. Trevor Davis is gone. Darius Shepherd didn't get any snaps at wide receiver. Jimmy Graham's a complete zero. Mercedes Lewis has never been a big key. Danny Vitale made a huge catch, so that was a nice little wrinkle there. On the running side of things, it is kind of hot and cold. The offensive line is okay, but I think it has just as much to do with the quarterback being so established and learning a new offense as it is young players that I think we still have big question marks hanging over their heads. We don't know what they're going to become. I don't know what Marquez Valdes-Scantling can be. I've seen him make some great plays and great catches, and he's got great straight-line speed, but can he become a complete receiver? I have no idea. Geronimo Allison is who he is. He has peaked. He is exactly what you're going to get from him at his best and at his worst. We've already seen it. So all that stuff thrown in together into one is kind of the reasoning for why I don't feel like the offense is ever going to be overly consistent. But just win games, it doesn't matter. I mean, apparently, as long as the Packers score 20 points, and that doesn't even require two touchdowns necessarily, they can win games this season, and that's at the end of it all, that's all that matters. Like we said at the beginning of the show, a win is a win. We'll take it. 3-0, it's hard to argue with 3-0, whether it's the ugliest 3-0 or the prettiest.
Something to that note is, if you think about it, I mean, last year the Packers had some pretty losses, if you will. You know, if you go to, say, the Rams game last year, that was lost at the end of the game. You're like, okay, the way it ended was a little devastating. But ultimately a loss that you can look back on and be like, man, they were right there in it. You know, they had an opportunity there. Whereas, you know, this year they don't have any pretty losses because they don't have any losses, which is a nice feeling. Because ultimately this game is, I think that I always call it the college footballization of sports. And in college football, not only does it matter if you win, but you have to look a certain way while doing it. And I think that has blinded some people in the NFL to the idea that, okay, in college football, yes, there are better teams that play inferior teams. Alabama played Southern Mississippi on Saturday. Not an equal playing field, not even in the slightest an equal playing field. The NFL, it's a completely equal playing field, maybe unless you're playing the Miami Dolphins these days. But otherwise, they're all professionals, they're all paid players, and anybody on any given Sunday can win a game. Unless it's the AFC East against the New England Patriots, apparently is the case. But nonetheless, I think that I don't care what it looks like. I mean, ultimately, that's what I think it comes down to, is I don't care what it looks like. You know, the Packers, they need to win on Sundays. And then if they're playing on Thursday, they need to win on Thursday. And then they need to win on, you know, whatever day it is. Something else that I think gets lost in the shuffle a little bit is, remember when the Packers won the Super Bowl in 2010, some of it looked pretty, but some of it also looked kind of clunky at times. The first game of the season against Philly, they scored 27 points. The defense actually looks dominant for a majority of the game before they're wiped out, and then they have to hold off Michael Vick. They have a game against Chicago where they only score 17 points and commit 18 penalties or something stupid like that. So even in years when the Packers have been really, really good, there's been some struggles with the offense. Now, the best offense that the Packers have had in recent memory was 2014, and I'll just go through this real fast. And it was Peter Bukowski who tweeted out this stat, and it was just for fun, Aaron Rodgers threw 3 weeks in 2014, 64 of 104, 697 yards, 6.7 yards per attempt, 5 touchdowns, 1 pick with a 93 rating. Aaron Rodgers threw 3 games in 2019, this year, 57 of 91, 647 yards. This is one fewer game. Or excuse me, no, it's not. I'm an idiot. Sorry, no, it's not. 7.1 yards per attempt, 4 touchdowns, no picks, and a 98.56 rating. Rodgers ended up winning his second MVP in 2014. I'm not saying that'll happen. I'm definitely not saying that'll happen because there are some concerns that I think are valid, and Jason, you touched on one. But just saying they do tend to start slowly, and this year the good news for the Packers is a slower start hasn't meant having to dig themselves out of a hole where they started 1-2. They had 3 years in a row where they started 1-2. They made the playoffs 2014, 2015, 2016. All three of those years, they started 1-2. Excuse me. No, they didn't. 2012, 2013, 2014, they started 1-2 all three of those years. I got mixed up with some of my numbers. Sorry about that. So they started 1-2 all those years, and they ended up going out of the playoffs that year. 1 year, they should have gone to the Super Bowl if not for a collapse. So slow start, a little clunky, but ultimately something that you can – the Packers do have something they can hang their hat on, and that's a positive because some teams don't. The Packers can hang their hat on the fact that their defense is going to show up to play every single week as long as they are relatively healthy. Something else you touched on, Jason, was the other guys, the non-Devontae Adams weapons, basically. So I want to talk about that because it was a hot-button issue in the offseason. Did the Packers do enough to address their offense? And one of the concerns I stated I had before the regular season game started was the Packers basically – we're banking on the fact that Matt LaFleur and the change in an offense would revive this offense. And they didn't add anybody as far as a weapon other than Jay Sternberger in the third round of the draft. They added Dexter Williams in the sixth round, so that's a little bit later, and he hasn't even been active through the first three games, so remains to be seen how he's going to be as far as a rookie goes. But no tight ends added, no receivers added. They were banking on the three young guys. Well, Jamon Moore's cut. Equanimeous St. Brown is on injured reserve. Marquez Valdes-Scantling had a nice day today. The deep touchdown, he had almost 100 yards receiving. That's a nice day. I think, this is my opinion, I think that because there are some questions already starting to surface, and you guys know how Twitter is, they have measured cakes for everything. But the question is starting to surface of, is Matt LaFleur's offense good enough? Is Matt LaFleur a good coach because he can't get the most out of Aaron Rodgers, blah, blah, blah. And I hate that crap because we're not watching a full view of the field. We can see the ball. That is it. It's the only thing we can see. And I think that blaming play calling or the play calls is some of the most meatballish take ever because it's impossible to know that. Do I think there are things Matt LaFleur can improve on as a coach? Absolutely. But that's not what this is about. What I'm saying about is I've often said it's not the plays – it's the players, and I don't know if the Packers have the players. For example, Mike McCarthy, when he was here, he didn't suddenly become a bad coach. He just ran an offense that hummed really well when he had Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, James Jones, Donald Driver, players that fit his system and ran one-on-ones. That's what his system was based around, win the one-on-one, win the individual battle. Once he had players that couldn't do that anymore, he struggled. Matt LaFleur's offense is a little different. They'll scheme some players open. And you've seen some of that. There are some changes. The problem I have is, Jason, I think like you mentioned, I think as of right now, and this could change, through 3 weeks, though, I think the Packers have 1.5 good pass-catching options. Devontae Adams, he's a star. And I will give a half to Marquez Valdes-Scantling simply because I don't think there's enough information to say you can hang your hat on him just yet. After that, Geronimo Allison, you said it. He peaked. Quite frankly, I don't see a purpose for him being on the field. I don't think he adds a whole lot to the Packers offense. When he has been on the field, he's been a net negative. And I know that sounds harsh, but it's true. He's been a net negative to start the season. He caught a touchdown last week. That was cool. Other than that, he had zero targets, zero catches, nothing against Chicago. It was a complete zero against Chicago. He fumbled the ball and almost single-handedly kept Minnesota in the game. And then today, relatively nondescript for Allison as well. He's a player that most of us were saying like, oh, you know, he had a good start to last year. Maybe that's something he can carry forward. He was also clear-cut the team's third option last year, whereas this year teams could be treating him like a number two. And there's a lot of variables that go into stuff like that. But outside of that, Jay Kumerow didn't play today. Darius Shepherd. The Packers have more undrafted wide receivers on their roster than they do drafted ones. That may not be a problem. Maybe these receivers start lighting the world on fire starting Thursday night in Philadelphia. But if they don't, then the Packers are getting what they paid for. And this is like a – it's a long-term effect of the defense being so bad year after year after year that the Packers felt that they couldn't address the offense because the defense needed so much help. And now we've gone from days where even in 2014, the Packers only had really two reliable receiving options, but they were both elite, elite players in Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. Davante Adams was a maybe, but that was kind of offset by the fact that the other two players were so good. The long-term effect of not being able to add to the offense is showing up now. And I think, you know, looking way, way ahead, you might see an offseason that looks somewhat similar to this past one, but for the offense. I mean, that all obviously remains to be seen on how everything goes. But it's possible that they start lighting things up, but I simply think the receiver position is not good enough right now. I don't know if it matters who's calling plays. It's easy for but Sean McVay calls plays in Los Angeles, and he's widely regarded as a good play caller. He also has Brandon Cooks, Cooper Kupp, and Robert Woods. Those are really good players. Todd Gurley's a dynamic running back. They have a good offensive line. The Packers right now don't have a lot of good players at the skill position. The tight end position, I got through all that on the receivers. The tight end position is a complete zero. Jimmy Graham, he's done. I really tried. I wanted him to be good. I like Jimmy Graham, the player. I've always admired him when he was in New Orleans. He's done. The Packers are trying to fit a square peg into a round hole there. They're trying to make him an inline tight end, and he isn't one. And I know it's popular to pile on Jimmy Graham. At the same time, I think that what other option is there? You mentioned Mercedes Lewis, Jason. He's never been a big pass catcher. And for as much love as Robert Tonyan gets on Packers Twitter, what has he ever done to prove that he's a reliable player? He's had one good play in his career, and it was kind of a broken play against Seattle last year on a Thursday night game. And cool, great play. You get credit for those. They don't take credit away from plays that happen. Today, Aaron Rodgers has him for a touchdown. Tonyan pulls up too soon, and it results in an incompletion when it probably should have been a touchdown. But other than that, Tonyan's never done anything of significance. And for everybody to say, oh, my God, he's clear-cut a better player, put him on the field now, I don't know how you know that. I'm not saying he's not. Maybe this is a case of a player who just needs an opportunity to get on the field. But I don't know that it is that either. So I think, like I mentioned, for as bad as the receiver position has been, the tight end position, in my opinion, has been worse because there's just nothing there. There's nobody there that scares anybody on anything. I went through and was thinking, oh, Jay Sternberger, not a big loss because it might be a redshirt year for him anyways. It may still end up that way. But, I mean, at this point, don't you at least wish he could get some practice time and maybe give you something in December if he could at all? That's just some speed that the Packers don't have at that position. So that's my thought on the weapons and the offense as a whole. I don't think it's an issue of coaching. I don't think it's an issue of play calling. I think it's an issue, at least as of right now, that the players simply are not good enough. Now, could that change? Sure, and I'll happy to admit that I'm wrong and I am. Jason, do you think the Packers have enough firepower on offense at this point in time?
Not in the passing game. I'm with you. So when Geronimo Allison could be the third or fourth option back in 2016, he was great. I still remember that touchdown catch he made in Detroit in week 17 when they clinched the division. And those kind of things are what you'll occasionally get from Geronimo Allison when you also have an otherworldly throw by Aaron Rodgers, which he will make because he's a great elite quarterback still, and he's very good. He's capable of doing crazy things with a football. But when you're putting Geronimo Allison in a situation where he has to be your number one, number two, draw coverage away, he's never going to draw that coverage. That's the problem there. The Packers can only address so many things in one off season. And unfortunately, receiver was just not one of them this past year. And you know, gone are the days of Jordy Nelson streaking down the field. James Jones is gone. Randall Cobb is not there. It's interesting because a lot of people, now that we're going into year two of the Brian Gutekunst era, he's now getting compared to Ted Thompson and more as he racks up more time. I mean, Ted Thompson was here for a long time. But one thing about Ted Thompson's tenure was that the wide receiver and pass catcher cupboard was never bare. That was one area that was rarely ever spared. I know that he didn't trade for Randy Moss, and Favre wanted Moss in 2007 and all that stuff. But wide receiver was definitely a focus and a constant focus with Ted Thompson, and that's the reason why your elite number one wide receiver is on the Packers, in fact. So that's one thing. The only other thing I wanted to add, Jake, because all the points you made were good, and I think we're in a very similar camp, was it was very frustrating to me today to see Robert Tonyan not properly run a route, which then cost the Packers points. He doesn't run full speed on his route in the beginning of the game. Aaron Rodgers throws a deep ball, and it's just past the outstretched arms of number 85. If you are going to be a mediocre player and you're not quite there yet and you haven't developed into a regular guy that can be on the field for all snaps, because Jimmy Graham may not even make it through this season. I think there's a possibility, and I'm serious when I say this, that he realizes that he can't play anymore, and he decides to hang him up before the season is up. You got no Jay Sternberger. You got that if Graham is gone, you are relying on Robert Tonyan, and he has to get out there and play. If you're going to get out there and you're going to play, run full speed. Run the damn route. Run the thing out. Be what you're supposed to be. That, you know, in a game like today, didn't end up hurting the team, but that was, you know, at least, I always say, you could say you had 6 points. It's at least 3 points off the board in a touchdown and potentially a seventh, a fourth with the extra point because you lagged it or you lollygagged. You know, and there's a lot of reasons why players do things. You know, you have to watch the film. Was this receiver open? Was this pass really there? I'm not sure. But that was one of the frustrating things to me was you've got a player in Tonya that has only got more to gain and more to pick up in terms of playing time. And he's not going to do it, doing boneheaded things like that today. So that makes me think that the Packers are going to have to kind of, you know, there's always one area of this team where they're kind of having to make chicken salad out of you know what. I really hope that the wide receiver position doesn't become that. I think because of Davante Adams alone, it won't be that dire. But we get towards the end of the season and guys start to get hurt and banged up. We could be in a little bit of a tough situation where there aren't as many options for Aaron Rodgers to throw to as we had hoped. And, Jake, I don't know if you agree or not or if it's hyperbole to say this could become an area where the Packers may have no choice but to try to make a move before the trade deadline or before too much longer.
Yeah, I think that's something that the Packers – Ross Uglum said it in a story for Packer Report after they won their first game of the season against Chicago. And he said, I think the ceiling of this team needs to be reevaluated on just how good can they be. They went into maybe their toughest road game of the season. They shut the Bears offense down. They scored 10 points. They won the game. And a game that I don't think a lot of people expected them to win. I wonder if Brian Gutekunst and company expected them to win if you got them in a room where they were saying in their heart of hearts, is that something they think? I don't know. I don't know how they would have felt. But I do think that, and I know there's a lot of popular names that get thrown around and, you know, trade for this guy, trade for that guy, sign Dez Bryant, stuff like that. I try to avoid those conversations as much as possible, unless I know the player's available. So like last week, Jason, we talked about Minkah Fitzpatrick because that was a report that Minkah Fitzpatrick was an option on the trade market. There's really been nothing in terms of receivers that could be an option like that. And I don't know. Like something today, for example, I had said last week after I watched the Bears and the Broncos play was that the Packers needed to kidnap Emmanuel Sanders and keep him in Green Bay. Now, Sanders didn't have a great day today, but really outside of Cortland Sutton in the running game, and we'll talk about that when we get to it, but the Broncos on offense as a whole, they're just not a very good unit. But I think that Emmanuel Sanders could be somebody that could help the Packers. For example, is he available? Probably not. So that's the hard part. Like some names I see, you know, trade for A.J. Green, that's one. He's hurt, wants a new contract. Do you really want to give a new contract to a guy like that? I don't think so. Corey Davis is one that's brought up. I loved Corey Davis in that draft. He was a top 10 player for me. I can't picture the Titans trading a player that was a top five pick for them not that long ago. Now, granted, John Robinson, who's the tight or the tight end general manager, didn't make that pick, but I just don't see the purpose on that. So I don't know. I think it's tough. I think that the good news with Brian Gutekunst in charge is that, kind of like I mentioned last week with Minkah Fitzpatrick, is these conversations are a little bit more realistic. Could the Packers add somebody at receiver or tight end before the end of the year? Yeah, I think it's possible. And I think that that's something that they could look into as soon as tomorrow morning, Monday morning, as soon as the Eagles game ends, because then you have 10 days to get this person ready for Dallas, theoretically. And I'm not reporting anything. I have no idea. But I don't know how you can't turn – this is a team that has finally a Super Bowl defense if they're healthy. And I think it's fair to say that after three games. This team has a Super Bowl defense. I think to let your offense struggle because of stubbornness, I don't know what to call it, because you weren't able to restock because you were wrong about the shape your team was in at wide receiver, I don't know. I think that that's a stone that you shouldn't leave unturned. And Jason, while I'm on that note, two words or less, there was a receiver that was released in this weekend by New England. You might know him. His name was Antonio Brown. So two words or less, Jason, should the Packers pursue Antonio Brown?
Shut up.
That's better than the response I thought I was going to get. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Hell no. Didn't want him when the Steelers were trading him. Didn't want him after the Raiders cut him. Definitely don't want him now. What a clown. Antonio Brown, for those of you that were on that train, said today he's not playing in the NFL anymore because they took away his guaranteed money, which, well, duh, you violate. Although, I believe, and this is a completely different topic, but I believe that the Patriots should have to pay him because they didn't cut him for the same reasons that the Raiders did, for example. There was no conduct detrimental to team stuff, anything like that. But that's beside the point. That's what I think about the offense. I think it's pretty clear that there's a need for some infusion of talent on that side of the ball. Will the Packers do that this year? I don't know. But I know that it's going to be talked about a lot for as much as the offense struggles, or for as long as it continues to struggle as years to go. And you can see it in the face of Aaron Rodgers too. You know, he's frustrated to a point. I'm not saying that he hates the head coach or anything like that, because I don't get into stuff like that. We don't talk about that kind of stuff on the show because, frankly, unless Aaron Rodgers throws a punch, those two yelling at each other, I'm not going to play body language police. I'm not going to do anything like that. We don't talk about stuff like that. So short of stuff like that, we won't. But he's frustrated, and I understand, because he's played – he and the team, I should say, have played okay through 3 weeks. They were okay last week. They were okay this week. But after that, you know, there's a whole lot of bad. And when the Packers are bad on offense, like when it's not going well, it is rough to watch. Even small, simple stuff. David Bakhtiari getting called for a false start puts him in first and 15. Rodgers gets a delay of game penalty, puts him into first and 15. Like, this offense can't afford to be behind the sticks. And in order for Matt LaFleur to set things up, they need to run plays. They're horrendous on third down. Absolutely awful on third down. They're in the bottom third of the league. I think there was a stat that said they were like 27th coming into the day, and they ended up 2 for 8 on third down today. That's not going to help. So it's hard to score when you can't sustain drives, and when you can't sustain drives, it's hard to run plays, and that's how you get, you know, the time of possession the way that it was today, and that's how you get all that stuff. That's it on the offense. I don't – you know, this is something that's going to be rehashed over and over. We're going to go into Philadelphia here in a little bit, but Jason – again, I'm running out of superlatives for this defense. I mean, it wasn't the dominance that I thought it would be. The Broncos were able to put some drives together. Their running game was pretty sound. Phillip Lindsay had a really nice touchdown run on what should have been a fourth down stop, but it wasn't because they didn't make the tackle. But ultimately, so, like, the first game of the season against Chicago, that was just sheer dominance. They turned the ball over. The Bears couldn't move the ball, anything like that. Last week was a little bit of both. The Vikings really had a couple big plays, but other than that, weren't able to move the ball. Today, Denver was able to move the ball a little bit. But what saves your team? Jim Johnson used to be the defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he often said his stats that he cared about the most for a defense were sacks, turnovers, and points allowed. Well, today, Packers allowed 16 points. If you only give up 16 points, that's going to win a lot of games. Turnovers, the Packers were able to force three of those, two fumbles and an interception, and sacks, they had six of them. So that is as good of a performance as Green Bay has had on defense in a really long time. Jason, we all talk about Za'Darius Smith, and well-warranted. Za'Darius Smith has been incredible. But he hasn't even been the best Smith on the Packers to start this season. That title would belong to Preston Smith, who had three sacks and a forced fumble today. Jason, I don't know what else to say about these two guys, but so far, that is absolutely money well spent in Green Bay. Tell me just how excited you are to have these two guys in Green Bay right now.
Oh, it's, I mean, if they did nothing the rest of the season, it might still be a debate of whether or not they were fantastic finds in free agency. I mean, I was more excited about Preston Smith than Za'Darius just because I knew more about him. And I don't care which one wants to come through and be great or if they both want to be great. Preston Smith had himself one hell of a day. Three sacks of the quarterback, and one of them, I think it was, if it wasn't the fourth down, I think it might have been the fourth down where he almost comes through unblocked. And I don't know if he made a move on that right tackle who was replacing Juwan James or if he just didn't get blocked. But he made the play, for crying out loud. I mean, he comes through, has the sack, gets a, you know, causes a fumble that the Packers recover deep in Denver territory, and then they're able to score. Those are the kind of things that make, you know, that change seasons for your team. And these players are going to change this season for the Packers. You know, and an incidental and kind of a, you know, intangible is, you know, if you go on social media right now, after the game, Za'Darius Smith takes a video celebrating the win on the field as they're getting ready to walk through the tunnel and they're finishing up, shaking hands with the Broncos, celebrating the fact that he's 3-0 and puts it on social media. He is happy to be in Green Bay. He's happy to be a Packer. That is buy-in right there. These guys, after every turnover, they go get together and they pose for pictures and they're celebrating as a team. We haven't seen that in almost a decade. It's been a long time. And even under Mike McCarthy, that wasn't their brand and they weren't that flashy, but they had that swagger. This defense has a ton of it. And guys like Rashawn Gary, Tony Brown, you know, some of these younger guys that are out there, I'd even argue Darnell Savage, even though he looks like he's going to be one hell of a player, are benefiting from having those guys around and benefiting from learning that attitude and that swagger and that matters just as much as the plays you make on the field. It's the mental game. You know, I opined that this defense is going to start to, if they have not already, creep into the heads of opposing offenses, and it's going to be a problem before the ball is even kicked off. Because teams now have to realize this defense has not given up more than 20 points in a game. So that's a great place to be. And you could argue that, you know, I don't know what would have come of it, but you could argue that the point total today should have been less because the Packers had 5'8", 190-pound Philip Lindsay bottled up on fourth down inside the goal line. And somehow he slipped his way through and the rest of the offensive line was allowed to carry him into the end zone. So there was an additional at least 4 points that could have come off the board. It could, you know, it could have been 12 points surrendered today. So this defense is stingy to say the very least. Then you've got Preston Smith, who's getting accolades on social media for meeting a fan before the game and tweeting out that, you know, he was happy to meet that fan, and it looks like that was a kind of a special encounter. You know, may have been someone's first time at Lambeau Field or somebody who's, you know, in a special situation and got a chance to meet Preston Smith. I mean, these guys don't know Green Bay, and they, you know, a lot of guys come to the Wisconsin area, they come to the Green Bay locale, and it's a little bit slower paced there, and it's not the great nightlife mecca that a Miami or a Los Angeles or a New York is. But these guys want to win football games. They just want to win games, and they're going to win a ton of them playing the way they do. I mean, because of them, I now feel better. You know, we did our season preview show, but we didn't know what this team was going to look like. I wish we could go back now because now I look at some of the games I had as losses, and I'm like, okay, I don't think they're going to lose that game now because this defense is just not going to let them go off. The way that they handled the Vikings, this team might finally get their first win at U.S. Bank Stadium this year, which I would love to see. Get that monkey off the back. Packers are going to play a lot of road games at the end of the season. That defense is going to be counted on big time. And when you add in the travel component, you know, things tend to kind of rack up. Again, Blake Martinez today, exhausted last week, had a ton of tackles last week, up and down again today. You know, these guys need that rest. I was really disappointed that the defense had to come back on the field for that last series, even though they handled it with no problem. I was bummed that they had to even come back out on the field. And the offense couldn't manage a simple first down to keep them off the field and let them rest even a little bit more. And this team's going to be – these guys are going to be exhausted by midseason if they have to keep playing the way that they have, but maybe they won't. I don't know. It's just great to have a defense in Green Bay. And even in 2014 when they were peaking, that defense wasn't this good. I mean, this is – you know, we're three games in, so there's a lot of season left, but this is potentially, you know, like 1996 all over again. And that defense led the league. And they had complete Hall of Fame and stars like Reggie White, Leroy Butler, you know, and the rest of that defense and all those guys that they had, Sean Jones. It's a beautiful thing. It's an absolute beautiful thing. And I hope that we're spending a ton of time gushing over them for many weeks to come. They were frustrating at times. They did the bend but don't break. There were times at the beginning of the game when I thought I was looking at 2011 all over again. A lot of takeaways, bend, don't break, keep the play in front of you, you know, let the Broncos convert. I got to give credit to Denver for having a good game plan. We know they like to control the clock. They were number one in time of possession coming into this game. And so you knew that was going to be their approach. They were going to try to go for the short pass and then punch it in. I didn't anticipate the Packers giving up 150 rushing yards today, but they did. And a lot of that came through the middle, which was concerning, but we could talk about that in another segment. But to your point, this defense, obviously my diatribe has gone on way too long because there's so much to say about them. They are phenomenal. I could not be more jazzed.
They are. And there was some bend but don't break today at certain points. But you know what? There's bend but don't break with a lot of defenses in the NFL. Even the Bears last year, the best defense in football, had some bend but don't break moments. Ultimately, thing is, when they get in the red zone, can you get them to kick field goals instead of scoring touchdowns? And then when you can do that, that's great. And can you get turnovers? The Packers have been able to do that through the first three games. And today, it wasn't, like I mentioned, it wasn't this dominant, they stand no chance of scoring kind of performance. But you know what it was? It was dynamic. It was really good because that's what this defense is. It's really good. They're able to create turnovers. They're able to control the game without turnovers because that's something else. The Packers, you know, we've seen that on the other end of the spectrum in recent years where the Packers defense was only good because they could get turnovers. 2011 is an example that comes to mind. They had the worst defense in the NFL from a yardage standpoint that year, but they turned the ball over so much in that given season that they were able to get the offense enough extra chances, bonus possessions, and score. Now, ultimately, what happened? The Giants didn't turn the ball over except once, and that team ended up bowing out. But what I'm saying is this team, this defense has an opportunity to be very, very good. I don't want to use the phrase special just yet. It has an opportunity to be very, very good. And you mentioned Preston Smith. You mentioned Za'Darius Smith. Those two guys are some of the biggest reasons why Za'Darius Smith has been better than advertised. This is a guy who had been pegged as a specialty rusher, third down inside rusher. And today, again, he had a sack from outside where he beat the tackle, bent around the edge, sacked Joe Flacco in the red zone. Little too close to the Jared Allen celebration for my version of comfort, but I've been told that maybe I'm being a little too difficult on that. So I'll let that go. But he did that, and then he got a sack to end the game as an inside rusher. Kyler Fackrell gets Flacco to step up in the pocket, and Za'Darius just eats him. And Preston Smith, I mean, man, what can you say? He's been, like I said, Za'Darius Smith's been awesome. There's been a lot of discussion about him, and Preston Smith has been better. This is a guy who, in training camp, everyone's asking, like, oh, is he making any plays? Nobody's tweeting about him. He's quiet, money well spent, blah, blah, blah. And Preston Smith has been maybe the best player on this defense through through three games. I don't know what that is. There's a lot of candidates. Za'Darius Smith, Jair Alexander, a lot of examples of people that could be on that list. But damn, it's fun. And another reason this defense has a chance to be good, Jason, is the first-round rookies. Darnell Savage had his first career interception today. Rashawn Gary had a fumble recovery off of Preston Smith's sack and then got his first career sack later in the game, which was nice to see. Mike Patton mentioned later in the week that Rashawn Gary was getting close and that he's frustrated, and it's just good to see Gary get that monkey off of his back, that when people can finally maybe leave him alone and let him play football. And there's something, I mean, I noticed in small spurts, I'm not as detail-oriented as some of these film guys like Ben Fennell and Andy Herman and Ross Uglum and guys like that. But at the same time, I do watch things and take note of them, and I am noticing at least from the broadcast eye, some slowed down stuff, and I'll be interested to see when I take a look again later this week how Rashawn Gary is getting better. And I think he is getting better at using his hands. He's learning the technique. And he mentioned today something else, because as soon as the Packers signed Preston and Za'Darius Smith, I said that I still wanted them to take a pass rusher in the first round. And I said something that would be nice about that is the fact that you wouldn't have to rely on him immediately to be a starter and play 75, 80, 90 snaps, however many it is on defensive game. And Rashawn Gary talked about that today. He said that it's been really helpful to have those guys around him and to help teach him what it means to be a pro, how to be an NFL pass rusher, those sorts of things. Big day for Rashawn Gary today. Finally get that monkey off his back, got some stats in the book, some sexy plays, some flash plays, which is something that he was criticized for at Michigan. He's got some hustle plays for the idiots that keep saying he doesn't hustle, which I think is ridiculous. I still think that's ridiculous. Whatever, I'm not going to give that too much mind. And Darnell Savage, ultimately, it goes in the book as an interception, and that was it. What should have happened is this should have been a touchdown, or at least a very long return, but the refs called it incomplete on the field. But if they don't do that, I think Savage has a chance to take that ball back for a touchdown. But encouraging signs. Jason, ultimately, I think the story of today's game and really early in the season, I mentioned the defense, but really, Brian Gutekunst. I mean, this, granted, it's only three games, and there's a lot that can change, but through three games, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, Elton Jenkins, Billy Turner, Adrian Amos, Darnell Savage, Rashawn Gary, all players that are playing some sort of role for the Packers, and significant ones, a vast majority of them now, in 2019. This has potential to go down as one of the greatest off seasons ever in the history of professional football. Now, granted, there's a lot more games left to be played, but you're talking about two guys that are playing right now in Preston and Za'Darius at an all-pro level. Billy Turner has stabilized the right guard position. Elton Jenkins shook off some rookie jitters, had a good start. The Packers' offensive line didn't allow a single sack today. That's Von Miller and Bradley Chubb over there. I know they don't have any sacks to start the season, but I would have bet you anything that they were going to get one, and I was going to have to hear some rant from Jason Perrone about how the Packers are always the ones to break those streaks. Well, Jason, damn it, they didn't. They didn't today. Adrian Amos solidified the safety position. Darnell Savage looks like an impact player. Rashawn Gary getting better every week and a freaky athlete. Jason, Brian Gutekunst not above criticism. There's plenty of bad moves he's made as well. I shouldn't say plenty. There's bad moves he's made as well. We mentioned Jimmy Graham earlier. That looks to be one of them. Not upgrading the receiver position. That looks to be one of them. But I think that's your story through the first three games of the season, is how well Brian Gutekunst appears to have done this offseason. What are your thoughts on the general manager and the players he brought in and how they've impacted this team through three games?
Results don't lie. There's three in the win column and zero in the loss column. So obviously it seems to be working out pretty well so far. And again, these aren't, it's not like they've beaten the New York Jets, Miami Dolphins, and we'll throw in the Cleveland Browns just because I like to troll. These are three very good teams, two of them in the division, and defensively that whose identities are their defense that the Packers have beaten And I think they've also left a lot of points on the field so far in still winning games. So if they haven't hit their stride and this offense is going to show up to the party at some point and they're going to play a complete game the way that they started last week against the Vikings, then the rest of the league is in trouble. And that includes you, Kansas City Chiefs and Los Angeles Chargers and Dallas Cowboys, the tough games that are still on the schedule. And I guess I have to throw in the Detroit Lions in there too, who were impressive in closing one out on the road against the Eagles. The Eagles were banged up. And my co-host, my astute co-host, Jeremy Vanderlinden of Cheesehead TV Live, made a great observation and said, you know, we have to hope this game goes to overtime. And I kind of looked at him and said, hey, I'm here for the Eagles dropping one and getting a little deflated on a short week coming into Green Bay. What are you talking about? And he said a full overtime period would do just fine for the Packers when the Eagles have to turn around and not only play on Thursday, but travel and play on Thursday against the Packers. Brian Gutekunst has done a phenomenal job. These acquisitions have been nothing short of great, and they're going to continue to grow. And like I said, the chemistry is already there. What they've added to the locker room is huge. You know, some people might roll their eyes at that and say, I don't care. That doesn't show up on the box score. That's not where plays are made, but that's where relationships are formed. And, you know, these guys, after they lost to the Baltimore Ravens in the preseason and they got home on the plane ride home, they had an impromptu film session in the middle of the night. And I have to believe that a lot of the leaders of that idea and the leaders of that whole thing were some of the new guys that came in. So Darius Smith has played 3 games in Green Bay. He's wearing the C on his uniform. He's a captain. He's a permanent captain on this team. That is winning in the offseason, and I trust that they'll continue to add pieces and build pieces. So if this team doesn't do anything special this year, you know, at this point I have to assume that they're very, very heavy favorites to win the NFC North. But if they don't make any noise in the playoffs this year and they come up short and some things happen or they just don't get it done, we're looking at a 2 or 3 year window here where this team has got a chance to do something special every year, as long as their key players are out on the field and available for them and to them. So, you know, the way they celebrate, the way they play together, the swagger, I've mentioned it all before, it's great. I don't know about the history of the NFL. I mean, there's a lot of off seasons that you could go back in time and through history. I mean, hell, if you want to get really technical, you could still argue that bringing Reggie White in that one move in 1993 might have been the biggest offseason in Packers history, you know, based on what it brought and what it meant. But, you know, we don't know what the story of these next couple of years Packers teams are. But you got to trust in the personnel group and the guys that are looking to bring the talent in, because I think they know what they're doing. So if they don't, you know, to our earlier discussion, if they don't decide to bring somebody in on offense, they don't bring in another receiver or they don't bring in another pass catcher because they're good with what they've got, I have to trust and believe that maybe that's the best option for the Packers, and they know better than we do. And they don't need to give up draft capital to bring somebody in right now, because they know that in another game or two, they see it on the practice field, 83 is going to develop and turn into a really good pass catcher, and all of a sudden, he's going to hit his stride. I mean, James Jones wasn't great in his rookie year of 2007. It took him a couple of years to become really, really good playing with Rodgers and getting on that same page. I saw Aaron Rodgers, Jake, and I want you to at least address this a little bit, because I know we're different in the sense that you don't care about some of this stuff like I do. I saw Aaron Rodgers smile more today than I've seen in a really long time. So if he's not playing great and he's still not getting what he wants, I mean, he was frustrated at times. He was frustrated with the play calls, frustrated with the timing of getting the play call in. But, oh boy, is smiling out there, and that can't be a bad thing. And I think that's just feeding off of the positive energy that some of these newcomers have created.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positive energy going around this team. You mentioned the team, the swagger that the defense has and stuff like that. That's something this team is feeding off of. And I think that it's a very positive development going forward. As far as Rodgers, I think that there's I don't know, like you mentioned, I got a hard time answering that question just because I don't pay as much attention to that kind of stuff as you do. But I think that obviously there's more smiling to be had. They're 3-0. Last year they were not 3-0. They were 1-1-1 and not a very good football team. This year, like I said, last year we could ask the question after the first game, what are the Packers good at? This year, what are they good at? They're really good at playing defense. Aaron Rodgers said it after the first game of the season. We got a defense, and he smiled. That might end up being the calling card. Like, if the Packers win the division and go to the playoffs or something like that, the name of the team highlight DVD is going to be, we got a defense. And I think that that's perfect. You know, I've mentioned several different – I kind of have gotten into the idea of what is the DVD going to be titled. So I've joked several times, like, if the New York Yankees were to win this year's World Series, what's the DVD title going to be? But for the Packers this year – through three games, it's definitely we got a defense. And it remains to be seen how that's going to be done and how that'll work going forward. Let's go to Philadelphia now. The Packers win 27-16, dominant offense, defense, special teams. Mason Crosby missed a field goal, but other than that, they gave up a big kick return, which kind of sucked. But ultimately, the special teams, I think, have been a relatively net positive for the first three games of the season. Philadelphia is on a short week. In my opinion, I said this before, they have one of the most talented rosters in all of football. The problem is that roster is banged up. Alshon Jeffrey did not play today. DeSean Jackson did not play today. They have – their biggest weakness is the fact that their secondary stinks. And they were relying on marrying that with – masking that with pressure in the face of quarterbacks. And they haven't really done that all that well yet either. So it's an interesting dynamic early in the season. They're 1-2. They could easily be 3-0. They came back and beat Washington in week one. They lost last week. Nelson Aguilar dropped what should have been a walk-in touchdown for the game-winning touchdown. And instead he dropped it and the Eagles didn't end up winning that game. And today they had a couple different chances. Their receiving core is very inexperienced. I mentioned I thought the Packers' receiving core wasn't the greatest at the moment. I don't know. Philly's might be worse at this point in time. Their defense is good. Their roster is talented. But I said this in the pregame show. I see no reason to change my thoughts. The Packers have been at home. Now, by the time they play Thursday night, they will have been home for 20 straight days. They haven't traveled outside of Green Bay since they went, and their one road game was in Chicago. Philly is playing. They played a home game today. They played a home game today, but they were in Atlanta last week, and then they were home the week before that. So they have traveled a little bit. They moved around. They have to come to Green Bay on a short week when they're banged up. They played a tough game. They lost a tough game at home today in Philadelphia. And I just think this is a game that is ripe for the Packers to take and start 4-0. And if they start 4-0, they're in a really good spot because, like you mentioned, Jason, they're going to play a lot of road games at the end of the season, and those are going to get tough. So to build up some wins now, get yourself some money in the bank now so that when a rainy day hits a little bit later, because there's going to be some adversity. They're not going 16-0. Newsflash for those of you that thought maybe they're not going 16-0. They're going to win a game or lose a game that maybe they shouldn't or something like that. And, you know, Jason, you mentioned – that there are some games that you wish you could pick differently now that we know a little bit more about this team. Well, we also know a little bit more about teams around the league. I picked the San Francisco 49ers to win four games all season. They have three wins after today. So, I mean, there's some of that stuff later in the year, but I really do. I think Green Bay wins this game. I think they win. The spread right now is Green Bay -4 for those of you that are gambling degenerates. I think the Packers cover that spread. This isn't indicative of what I think about the Eagles because I mentioned that early in the year, but I just think everything is lining up for the Packers to win. Their defense should be able to control some things. The Eagles' wide receiving core is not that good. If you can stop Zach Ertz, which the Lions basically today doubled him on that last drive and said, okay, somebody else is going to have to beat us, and they couldn't do it. I think that has to be your game plan. If Alshon Jeffrey can't play, DeSean Jackson probably won't be able to play. If those guys are playing, maybe it'll be a little different. But since they're not playing, I don't think they're playing at least. I think Green Bay wins. I think they have another defensive kind of game where you get frustrated and the offense is, you know, by the end of the game, you might be like, okay, this offense sucks and Aaron Rodgers is done and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's going to be 4-0 because Green Bay is going to win this game 21-17. Jason, you had this game pegged as an L at the beginning of the year, if I remember correctly. Are you changing your mind?
Completely. 100%. Short week. I mean, I just didn't know how big of an impact these guys were going to have and how this defense was going to be. So, yeah, I think the Packers are looking really good right now, especially with as banged up as the Eagles are. It just doesn't look bode well for them at all. So, yeah, I think Green Bay, they're only favored by 4 right now, but I think they come out of this one okay. And then their first real stiff challenge of the year is going to be on the road the following week at Dallas. The one good thing about the short week this week is that it's only 4 days away. So today would be the equivalent of Wednesday if you consider when they're going to play their next game. But to have a couple of extra days to just rest up and also game plan for Dallas, because right now Dallas is running through everybody. They look like they're going to be some fierce competition for the NFC. And the Packers could end up back in Dallas for all the marbles once it's all said and done, the way that things are going so far in the early goings of this season. So, yeah, I think the schedule makers did Green Bay a huge favor at the beginning, and Green Bay has to just find a way somehow not to go through a lull in the middle of the season or during a couple of these road stretches. You know, they've got a tough one with the, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the Chiefs and the Chargers are in back-to-back weeks. That one's going to be really tough. So they get, you know, it gets made up for, but I've been wrong once already. I had Chicago, the opener in Chicago, you know, just coming up against a buzzsaw in week one. So let's make it 2-for-2. And then hopefully, you know, whenever I had the next loss, which was Dallas, let's make it a third. Third time's a charm, right?
Yeah, that's hoping. If Green Bay is able to win and Dallas is able to win next week, and I'm not sure who Dallas is playing, I'll look that up as I'm in the middle of talking here, but that sets up for a potential heavyweight kind of fight at Jerry World for NFC supremacy early in the season. Dallas next week in New Orleans, who won today against the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, a game that really wasn't as close as the final score would indicate. But the Cowboys are there. I would think they should win that game. So that definitely sets up for the potential of maybe even potentially the last of the unbeatens in the NFC. If Detroit were to lose to Kansas City, that's a certain possibility. So if Green Bay wins, I mean, you've got a chance for 2 4-0 teams in Dallas that almost feel like the mid-90s again, where the Packers are going to Texas Stadium, just hopefully with a different result so they're not getting spanked on national television in front of everybody. But that'll be interesting. I had Dallas pegged as a loss at the beginning of the year, but I didn't think the defense was going to be this good. So we'll see what happens. All I know is it's exciting times right now. It's not the prettiest. You know, would it have been nice to see the Packers win 41-10 today and light up the scoreboard and throw the ball all over the lot and get some big plays in the running game and all that stuff? Yeah, sure, great. At the end of the day, they're 3-0. And that's a lot more fun than 1-1-1 or 1-2 or whatever their record would be after three games that isn't 3-0. So Packers will play the Eagles on Thursday night, again, on NFL Network. And Fox will have the game as well. So we'll get Joe Buck and Troy Aikman for the first time this season, I do believe, which is a positive thing for me. I guess most Packers fans don't really like Joe Buck, which I don't fully understand, but more power to you. I'm not going to get into that with everybody on the show. But they're 3-0. They beat the Broncos and Joe Flacco today at Lambeau Field and are off to a really good start. So that'll finish us off for today's show. And we've got some interesting stuff coming forward for you guys. It just is going to kind of depend on some timing, so I don't want to say all the way just yet. But tune into our Twitter account, at Packer Pulse, because we will have some new information for you guys as to how we're going to bring content to you here in the near future. So check that out. That's at Packer Pulse. You can follow Jason on Twitter also. He's at Jason Perrone. You can follow me. I'm at Jacob Westendorf, and you can find the work at Packer Report 66. It's been a lot of fun. We've got a lot of stuff right now They're doing a 30% off promo for VIP, so that's something I think you should look into. The message boards are always interesting, so that's something you could tune into as well. But there's a lot of content coming your guys' way. Packers 3-0, it's a lot more fun when they're doing well. And I present to you right now the fact that nobody can dispute, and that is that Matt LaFleur has the best winning percentage in the history of Green Bay Packers head coaches. So home run hire there, Brian Gutekunst. Well done, everybody there. All jokes aside, thank you guys for listening to this show. And, of course, as always, go Pack, go.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.